Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on the DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of FSW, the future stars of wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, how's the week been? You know, you're getting ready for the big show, No Escape, on the 31st. But you have, you know, little things going on in the meantime, right?
Yeah, so I guess it's a lot of ups and a lot of downs. You know, this past weekend, we ended up working with Prim Nevada, Buffalo Bills, and what started as a ring rental ended up being, you know, through my guy Ruben at Mass Republic. He got us some of the luchadors from Tijuana. We had the mariachis, a couple other of our guys, and it was a good outing. They had a big Mexican festival that had shit tons of people there. And then as of Friday, then it started raining. So the whole thing was an outdoor event. So right. Now it's like, okay, we're going to move it inside. And it was like, we were going to be right in the parking lot. So it's like, and then it wrapped around. So it was all around. So in between the bands, we would put on some matches. By Friday, it was like a 2-second setup. We could actually just drive into the area and plop the ring down, and we're good to go. Then it starts raining Friday, and I'm thinking, oh, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. Then I get an email. Hey, we're going to move everything inside. Okay, we're going to have you in the food court. Okay, well, now, granted, all the bands are now in the arena.
Oh.
So there's the arena that seats 5,000. Then you have to come out of the arena. Of course, to get in the arena, you all have to go through all the, you know, metal detectors and things like that to get in.
Yeah.
So now you're telling me when the band ends right around 3 o'clock, they have to now walk through the casino to the other side, which is the food court. Except the food court only has one coffee place open and everything else isn't even opened yet. Okay. So I'm like, okay, well, the pay's the same. Awesome. We're going to have three fucking people watching this shit. I'm like, not their fault, you know, because of the rain. What are you going to do? But it was like, why couldn't we just stick the ring in the arena? And then everybody would be able to see it.
Yeah.
But that decision was already made. You know, I didn't know that everything was going on in the arena over there. It's like, okay, whatever. And then throughout the day, because we're there at like 10 in the morning and the first thing starts at 3, people are like, oh, you guys doing wrestling? And it's like, yeah, we got it coming up at 3, blah, blah, blah. And there was a few groups of, you know, 4 or 5 people asking. So that made it a little positive. But literally, you know, at 2:15, 2:30, there's, you know, they have a couple of games that are set up. You know, it's like, you know, you swing the hammer and hits the bell, of course, right where we're right in the area we're at. So it sounds like gunshots. You know, they thought they got out of the streets of Tijuana, the luchadores. And it was like, what the fuck? And then we go outside and saw what it was. It was like, man, this is loud as can be. All of a sudden, people start trickling in. And by the time we started, you know, we did 3 matches. There was literally a few hundred people that were like actually enjoying and getting into the show and you know, the matches. There was the last group, they worked for AAA, you know, in Tijuana. Ultimo Maldito and Archangel something. You know, offhand, I can't think. There's been so much going on. Divino, Archangel Divino. And they happen to be brothers. But we wanted to space out 3 matches with 8 guys. So we did a singles match. Mm. And those guys fucking brought it. Like, man, they killed it. You know, that, you know, it was, you know, Vikingo Commander Lucha. You know what I mean? Not Super Porky Lucha. You know, so it was very, very enjoyable to watch. Crowd got into it. You know, they had their merch out there. They sold some masks. So it ended up, you know, everybody was pleased at what it was. So I go home. These guys aren't there yet. You know, And they took care of us. You know, they gave us $30 food vouchers each. And, you know, I had a couple extra. Not something I thought I would ever do, but I went into the steakhouse and ate by myself a nice filet mignon and some mashed potatoes and crab cakes. Very steep price, $29 for two of them.
Wow.
Not that impressed. I was like, dang. And, you know, usually when they have them at, like at Sunset Station, they have a different type of spicier, sweeter sauce. Well, this one was kind of a base off like mayonnaise, ranch type thing. I don't even know what it was, but it was like, yeah. Like, I'm not a ranch person. So I get home. Warren's car still, you know, helping with the Ring crew. So there was his car still there. And the trailer's not back. And I'm like, yeah, what the hell? I had two vouchers left when I left. So I gave them to Ricky and crew. And I guess those guys decided to eat. But my first thought is, like, what the fuck happened to the Ring? These guys still aren't there. Needless to say, I get the call. We got a problem. What the fuck? Because, you know, Rocky's not there, and Rocky's always the one who makes sure everything's in place right. to lock up. And I guess they didn't fashion, you know, the come-alongs to tie everything. And, you know, Rocky's precise. When I go to grab it, I cannot do anything unless I unlatch the come-along and do it. So he goes, we lost the padding. I'm like, what? Yeah, we lost the padding. It must have broke. And of course, it didn't break. It was, let's get out of here now. And, or, you know, it wasn't tied down the right. way it was supposed to. Now, you can tie something down not that tight, and it's the ring post that weigh 200 pounds. But right. if it's padding that you should have had over twice, all you have to do is get a wind, and that's what probably happened. It came up, and then all the padding flew off the trailer. Yeah. So I'm like, well, go back around. You know, maybe it's on the thing. And they found one piece. The other three were on the other side of the highway, which, you know, go back around again and pull onto the left side. Needless to say, what we made from the ring rental and the event, I had to shell out $1,165 to High Spots the other day to hope we're getting the padding by next week.
Jesus.
So that was a fucking disaster.
Wow. So I did see the reach out for the padding on Facebook. Yes. So what's going on? Did you find anyone who has
it? Yeah. I just said, yeah, 1165. So what happened was High Spots had it for 600, Monster Rings and Cages. Everything was based off the shipping because it isn't shipped like UPS.
Right.
It's shipped on a freight truck.
Right.
Okay. So Monster Rings and Cages was $705 to ship it. So it's more money than the actual padding.
Right.
So then by messaging it, there's a guy, Xavier, out of California, who a lot of people use. And High Spots was $600, but then the shipping was $565. Well, Xavier was $1,000, and I have to go pick it up in L.A. So it's like, you know what? Might as well just do it through High Spots. Like, if we had people from L.A. coming in, but what are they going to do? Come in the day of the show, and now I got to wait for them to get here to put in our padding? So we're not really saving any money.
Right.
So it's like, you know what? High Spots, I've dealt with them before. You know, you got to do what you got to do, but it just gets frustrating sometimes. You know, it's like every dollar counts, and to shell out for padding on a ring we bought last year that the padding was brand new kind of sucks.
Yeah. So who's working for free for you for the next year?
Well, unfortunately, it's basically all the students. So what are you going to do? You know, they're helping out. They're right. trying to do you a favor by doing stuff. So it's like, you know, how do I punish the mariachis who sold us 77 tickets in two events they were at?
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not that type of person. You know, we got a four-way tag at the pre-show. I'm not going to pull the guys that offered to let us use their truck and then had an issue. And again, who didn't tie it down? You know, it could be any one of the culprits. I don't know which one did it. There were six people there. Yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, it is what it is. And you got to take the hit, you know, not happy about it. But you have to, you know, you got to move on, I guess.
I think the six of them should, the punishment should be wrestling in the ring one training session without the padding.
You know.
Then you'll never lose that padding again.
What would Tom Howard do?
there'd be a lot of Himalayan squats going on. So that's what went on in Prim.
And then to kind of like end the story, it was basically a packed house inside the arena, which would have been nice, you know, 3,000-4,000 people. So they had some pictures taken. So I saw some of the mariachis, but I didn't see any of the other ones. So I was looking at it, but then I saw it was like, well, Cinco de Mayo weekend. They have a big Mexican concert. And it's like, well, if you guys do really well in that, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we do a Cinco de Mayo wrestling show? Like, they paid pretty good money to just have eight luchas be in a food court to watch wrestling for free. Okay? Yeah. And they paid for that. How about you pay a little bit more, but we get a full-blown show? We can get a commander. We can get a psycho clown. We can get Conan. You know, there. Why don't we do a show that weekend? So now the people that are also coming for the concert, because I heard, you know, I'm very inquisitive. I asked the questions. So the guy Joe, who I had to deal with, and it was like, hey, there's sure a lot. You know, they do a lot of the concerts, Mexican concerts, like database wise. And they go, well, you know, 75% of our market base is the Latin market. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty interesting. I'm like, are they all like Vegas people or California? And he goes, no, they're all California people, because we kind of treat them way better than the strip casinos are going to do, because they want the high rollers. They're not they could care less about that middle of the road grouping. Right. Where they welcome them with open arms. They own all the casinos. They own the lotto store. Like, the gaming company in Prim is a monopoly. They own everything, including, you know, the grocery store. So if they're going to be here for this concert on the Saturday, well, how about you bring in us on the Friday or the Sunday, and now they're getting rooms for 2 days. They're eating. You know, you couldn't get into the Denny's. The line was 50 people. And they had a Denny's. They had the steakhouse. They had the buffet. They had a Mexican place that was also the original place is Redondo, California. So I guess it's a big deal for the Californians, you know. And then a pizza place that I would never try eating in pizza from Prim. But, you know, other people will. So I sent them I said, you know what? Hey, here's a proposal. This is what we can do for you. We can bring in a bunch of people, you know, dealing with Ruben and Klein Rock from Mass Republic. Yep. You know, they get all the Lucha guys because they help get and expedite their visas. Yep. So a lot of the guys you see in AEW have been wrestling because the visas they got were through Ruben and Kevin, who run the Mass Republic out of California. Plus, they're the only ones who also did the Lucha Expo at the Westgate. That was a fucking debacle a bunch of years ago. But they had, you know, every big name, Lucha Underground, Rey Mysterio, Conan, Vampiro, you know, Judas Macias, like Blue Demon. Like, they had everybody. So they have access to all the top luchas. So I think it would be a win-win, especially in a casino that the focus is on that. Like, I saw three or four concerts over a 2-month span, and it was like, yeah, they had Casey and the Sunshine Band for the older crew and the Blues Traveler, but there was more Mexican concerts than there were American concerts. So obviously they know their fan base. So not only is it, hey, we got some tickets for sale because they gave us money and they didn't charge for anything. Now you buy the show and you also now can sell the tickets. And we can do meet and greets, and the Luchas are going to sell their masks and all the other stuff. Like, we could put on a fantastic show. Like, I always thought the Silver Nugget would have been great, but I didn't have anybody in place like a Ruben to be able to get the radio stations on board and deal with the wrestlers. You know, he kind of did everything for me on the fact of, because last minute we had to supply the wrestlers. And unfortunately, one had car trouble, so we were short one. But, you know, it ended up being, you know, the four guys we used were really, really good. And those guys would definitely be on that next show. And then we would spotlight it. Like, you know, that was part of the deal. Like, we'll get you three international superstars. You know, we're not looking for you to pay us. And then the guys that we used on the show are the ones we're going to have. Then you're not going to sell a ticket that way. And I'm not one to look like, hey, let's make extra and make really good money one time and never deal with them again. Instead of, hey, let's everybody be happy. We all make some money. And we do this now. Hey, every Cinco de Mayo and every Mexican Independence Day in September, say. Yeah. But there's no saying we can't do that show four times a year based off their bigger concerts. Because we could do the Lucha show at 2 o'clock and the concert at 8 o'clock, you know, and it's all in one day if that's what they wanted to do. So there, that ended up being a very, very good connection, you know, despite losing out on the one day profit because of having to purchase new padding because of it. And again, you know, regardless of everything, that is a big mistake, and you can't let that happen.
Right.
Doesn't matter how much money you make. You know, we've transported the ring 150 times, and we've never had that issue.
What did Rocky say when he found
out? Oh, yeah, he wasn't happy. Because he literally, when I called him, and then I called, then he called me back like 30 minutes later. And I'm like, oh, what's up? Well, yeah, I just walked by the house and I was checking it, and we're lucky we didn't lose everything, because that's how I'm being told that it was so loose that he basically can go like that. And what's funny is I grabbed the ring bell. Well, when we left, I was going to grab it again, but they had already put it in the bucket. So now Noah had his birthday party on Sunday.
Right.
Hey, where's the ring bell? I'm like, oh, Jonathan has it. Hey, Jonathan, where's the ring bell? Oh, we left it on the trailer. Okay, well, you know, we had a show. You guys, you were a ref on it. Ricky's on it. All you guys that are here know that there's that show tomorrow because you're a part of it. So what they do is they put the bucket on the trailer. Then they take the 150-pound ring steps and put them right on top of the bucket, which isn't even a bucket. It's like a square bucket, I guess you could say. So that's when I drive back home and see this, and I'm trying to get the ring bell. So I have to loosen it, but I can't budge it. So I actually have to open it up, click it, and then try to maneuver it so I can open it, and I still can't get to the bucket. Rocky was able to, but again, it was just like, come on, guys, you know, use your heads.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I was like, hey, Isaac, go download a ring bell sound on the internet, because I didn't think we'd have the bell. We ended up getting it, but it's like, you know, nobody was thinking. They just plopped the thing with the ring bell on there, and it was forgotten.
Speaking of, how did Noah's birthday come off? Was it good?
I guess fine. I was only there for a little bit. I was there before, you know, I had to make sure everything was in place to set up. You know, I watch enough wrestling that I didn't really feel like watching more wrestling.
Yeah, but did you get birthday cake? That's the big.
Oh, I didn't even know there was birthday cake. No,
I would assume, right?
I guess I don't know. I don't know what Shant brought to the party.
Well, you know what? A wrestling birthday without someone getting cake in their face is not a wrestling birthday.
Well, then that would be in the ring, and now my fucking canvas would be destroyed as usual.
Oh, man. So, you know, looking at the 31st, everything all set. Anything with Silverton that has come up in the past, Wink, or is everything looking?
I'll tell you what. I called yesterday, like I called last week, and I knew we were almost sold out. So on the front row. So I went to transfer a couple tickets. A guy bought a ticket through me. So I said, I need your email. It was only one ticket. So I sent it to him. Then I'm like, hey, Garth, let me transfer you the tickets. And when I went there, it was no front row available. And, you know, we had secured 30 for ourselves and we were going with 85. So there was 55 sold front row after the fact. When I talked with him, we were at 39 on last Friday. Okay, last Thursday or Friday, we were at like 39 tickets on the front row. We had 16 left. I think I transferred a few more over. And then by Monday or Tuesday, there was none left. I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, we sold a handful of front rows or whatever. And then the second row only had a few. I called them yesterday. And in my mind, I'm still like, really? What the fuck? Because he goes, oh, yeah, you got a 55 GA. And then he goes, front row. I'm like, oh, so the 55 front row? He goes, no, GA. And I'm like, okay, you probably, that would be like 50 more since 5 days ago. He goes, yeah, I'm 55 front row. I'm like, okay. And 32 second row. And I'm like, okay. And then you got on the four packs, you got 37. I'm like, 37. Times four? Like, you're telling me we went from 60 tickets sold by, you know, because we still have all our regulars, whatever, you know, leading up, that we met, that we somehow went from 60 to almost 300 tickets sold. Like, in 4 days? That seems like weird. And he gave me the numbers of the, you know, what the gate would be. And it's like, well, that sounds right. But it's just like so weird to me because a lot of our regulars still, you know, they haven't right. bought the tickets. They're on hold for them, right. You know, and there's, you know, probably 30 of those which are on the front row. And it's like, okay. And then, but you know, we offer vet tickets or whatever. And it's like,
right.
Wow, we're not even talking about, like, I don't know, you know, maybe the wrestlers got their friends and family to buy tickets through the website that I don't know of.
Right.
Because to be at over 400 tickets already seems insane when we got 10 days left. More people usually buy them, you know, the week of, a couple days before. Front row is the one that always moves quick because when they're gone, they're gone. And most people, if like they don't got first row, they're not worried about second. They'll just sit in GA because it's only 3 feet further back. So right. you're either front row or GA. So it was really kind of weird that we're looking at the numbers at close, and that's not counting my GA people that are trying to, you know, send money because, like, hey, Jamie, are we able to buy? Because last time you couldn't sell tickets at the door.
Right.
So he's like, no, we're going to have a QR code. They could scan it. Well, our older folks aren't going to be able to scan a QR code and buy a ticket at the door. They're going to either get them from me beforehand, because I had to tell everybody, I can't sell you the tickets at the door. I don't know. Every other thing when you buy tickets for an event, you don't do it the way we do it. We do it where, hey, you just get them from me. Well, right. we can't do that here. I don't understand why it's that difficult to process. You know, you can go online or you can go the day of to the box office and get them. You know, the prices are similar, but it's a little more through them because they're charging the fee and they're charging the LET. And I try to give you a little deal like, hey, just give me $45. I'm not going to charge you $48.76. That's what the Silverton price would have been for first row. Just give me $45. I'll transfer the ticket to you. Yeah. You know, I'll eat the $2, $3. Not a problem. you know, because it's only our main regulars. And even a lot of our regulars, they bought tickets through the website.
Yeah.
You know, because it was just easier than having to wait to send it to me, for me to buy the ticket, for me to transfer the ticket.
Right.
You know, because I'm not going to continue to do this, but, you know, it's our first show back there in months, and it's the second show we've done there. So I'm trying to make it as easy as possible because we need to pack the place. The more people that show up there, the easier it is to say, hey, why don't you knock a few hundred dollars off for us? Why don't you let us do really well instead of okay? Because you're doing really well because of us. You know, oh, yeah, all our people are talking about it. Everybody's excited. Great. So that would mean you should want us there instead of three or four times a year, maybe eight times a year.
Right.
Yeah. So if you save us $300 eight times a year, it's almost like, hey, buy seven and get one of the events for free. Like that's how you work together. That's how you deal with people that we're professional. We break down your fucking chairs that we don't have to do.
Right.
We offer to help to cut down on your labor on who you got to pay to do things. So why don't we get a deal in that?
Well, you know, Joe, they might lose a chair or two.
Yeah, they might. You know, those big white ones. I don't. That's great for people that are filming stuff. So if it's ever empty, it doesn't look like shit.
So, you know, what do you think? You know, because you know, you said it before, and I've known the Silverton for a long time, and they do bring in maybe one or two name acts a year, and that's even pushing it. Most of it is tribute bands or cover bands. I mean, what prevents a company from doing that? In terms of, you would figure that they'd want to run the venue more since they have it, or is it just, you know, I it just confuses me, man.
Well, okay. So what you got to understand is not that venue is not just used for a concert or a wrestling show. Okay. I had talked to him last week and it was Friday. So I know it was Friday. And hey, you got anything going on? And it was like some kind of corporate thing. So there's a lot of corporate things that they go that they probably can whack them for a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because they're going to include the food and the event and all the other stuff. Okay. So that's what's going to happen in that situation. They'll try to get a quinceañera, birthday party, wedding, you know, whatever. So that's going to fill it up. But like this, you know, I look and I see, hey, what's the entertainment? Okay, the Galactic Empire. May the fourth be with you. Join us at Vail Pavilion to enjoy the mighty Galactic Empire. Does that do well? I don't know. Maybe. Metalachi on May 3rd, Cinco de Mayo weekend.
And Metalachi has been there, I think, for the past like 3 years. So that we'll assume does well.
Well, because you know they're paying them. They're not renting the room and selling their own tickets.
Right.
So regardless of what they're doing, they're paying these people. Are they bringing in 500 people? I don't know. Because what is the cost to them and how many people do they need to, say, break even? While on our event, they've already made money before the doors open because of their $4.50 charge on 200 tickets is already $1,000 on top of what we're paying. And now you're talking about the bar. Now, is a $7,000 to $10,000 profit for one event, or that's how much we're bringing in. If you bring in $10,000 on Metalachi and you say you paid them $5,000, so they have to do exactly what we do, and you're still only making half the money by having them there instead of having us there. And we're doing all the work.
Right. Yeah.
And you're making double. So wouldn't you want me there more than you would want them there? Because from what I gather, 7 to 10 is more than 5. And we're able to do it 4, 6, 8 times a year. They're going to do it for you once.
Right.
Now you got to find another group. They got the Gypsy Kings. Well, I remember the Gypsy Kings in 1990, whatever.
Yeah.
And Bombaleo. okay, that was an American hit for them, blah, blah, blah. They sang in Spanish a lot. Are they popular with the Latin community? I don't know. Maybe. But I'm probably thinking that they're going to cost more than $5,000.
Yeah.
So I don't know. In the past, I've seen Billy Ocean and Juice Newton. You know, these are people in the 80s that had stuff. And right. I remember dealing with them when it was Juice Newton. And it's like, you know, it's cool. And you got Juice Newton and you're putting a fucking billboard right on the highway, like a standalone, not like the marquee, which is great. Looks fucking phenomenal. Right. When I was driving a Prim, it was like the clarity was mind-boggling. But yes. Also by the golf course on the left side, when you're driving down the 15 or whatever it is, Silverton has like three giant billboards that are 24/7. They don't switch at all. And it's like, so, hey, how about you put one for FSW? We draw 500 or 600 people. You have one for Juice Newton. Like, is she going to draw? Well, if she doesn't, you know, we'll get house seats. Right. So what you're trying to do is get people just to come into your venue. That's why you're having an event. Right. My event costs you zero. Wouldn't you want, isn't everything a profit? So if you put that there, if for Juice Newton, you have to give away 200 tickets to get 400 people in there. I'm right. pretty sure it takes an awful lot at the bar because the ticket sales aren't paying her. Now you have to dip into the thing. So if you're not making any money, that's cool, but you're getting 500 people in your event because that's what you want is people in your venue. Who's better than FSW? When it didn't cost you a dollar to get anybody into the venue.
Yeah, right.
I have to walk through your venue. I know people are going to eat. I know people are going to drink. I know people are going to throw money in the machine. The door's open. You see people outside mingling around 5 o'clock show. Doors open at 3:30, 4 o'clock. They're there at 1 or 2 o'clock. They're doing something.
Yeah, and you got, you know, with their setup too, it's it's one of the smarter setups where you have machines right in that area where you're going to be waiting to get into the door.
It was like the Silver Nugget. Do we have to make people come through the casino? Can't we bring them around the back? It's like, don't you want people in your casino? You know, for every five kids, there's 50 adults.
Yeah.
So maybe if there's 200 people standing there, you can live with 15 kids standing there because they're allowed to stand there because they're allowed to eat in the restaurant. You have a bowling alley that has kids.
Right.
Yeah. Like, why are you begrudging people from wanting... If they go in through the back, they are never stepping into your casino. Ever, 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 ever. Samstown, you want to go to the bathroom, you can't go inside the arena. You have to leave the venue to go into the casino to take a piss.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I've never understood it. Just like I said, hey, you know what? Caesar's Palace. Hey, we could bring you 7,000. 7,000? We make fucking 7 million a day. But a local casino that's relying on as many locals as possible, even if we only bring you 200 people, those 200 people, probably 170 of them have never stepped foot in your casino unless they came to a wrestling show. So you have the potential of somebody going there and eating. Now, after the show, you have a go to the coffee shop and see how many of the wrestlers and the fans are in your coffee shop at 9, 10 o'clock at night on a Sunday eating. We all used to go eat after the show there. There'd be 5, 6 tables, 30 people. 20 bucks a pop. That's another 600 just from the wrestlers. And then the other fans that would come in, you know, don't tell me at 9, 10 o'clock at night on a Sunday that you're bringing in $1,000 in revenue over an hour and a half period.
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't get it.
Yeah. And they have a big enough space too, where, you know, I mean, like, It makes a lot of sense for the bar, for instance. Like, they have that bar that's what, about 20 steps away from the entrances there. And, you know, it's like you got a bar right there. You got the Johnny Rockets right there. Like, everything is right by the facility, too. Yeah.
Right. So, it was like, okay, so, you know, we got Royce and Jarrell. They're flying in from Washington for the show, from another show, and Limelight, the out-of-town guys. You know, you count me a couple, two rooms. Like, back in the old days when we had to deal with them, we get five rooms, whatever. Oh, yeah, we can get you a discount. Bro, it's Easter fucking Sunday. Yeah. How many people? You're not sold out of the casino, okay? Casino rates are $40-$50. You're not going to give me two lousy rooms when I'm bringing you fucking $8,000? It's like little shit like that that I don't need to talk about, but it's like, hey, just give me a room. I'm asking for two rooms. They're worth $50 each.
Yeah.
Instead, since we couldn't work out the discount for multiple events because everything took too long again, not my fault. Hey, here's two rooms, Joe, because now you got two guys that are going to be in the casino. Is there a chance they're going to eat breakfast? Is there a chance that $40 room that doesn't cost you a dime because it's already there? Like, that guy could drop $500 in the machine for all you know. But now I have to get him a room somewhere else.
Right.
So they're going to sleep, wake up, and eat there. They're not going to wake up and drive to the Silverton because I did a wrestling show there and eat there.
Right. Yeah.
But it's like little things like that. It's like if Metalachi's playing there, they're getting free rooms. I bet they're not getting a discount on the room because they're getting paid to be on the show.
Right. Right.
But unfortunately, we haven't reached that value to people.
Right.
Now, when we go to Prim, hey, you know, these guys are coming from Tijuana. They may be wanting to stay after. Can you just get me a room? Yeah, no problem. I got there. Here's the room. Here's the tickets. You're all checked in. You have to do anything. Just go to the room. Turned out they didn't need the room. No big deal. Hey, how many guys you got? 16. For the staff, the crew. Here you go. Here's $30 gift certificate, food vouchers for Denny's, the steakhouse, the buffet, the grill, wherever you want. Now, that's 16 of us. They had five bands. They must have gave away 200 vouchers.
Yeah.
Didn't care because they're valuing every person that's coming into the door. We're valuing the band that we're paying money to, but also making sure, hey, as I tell people, I want to go back there. They take care of you. They paid more than the Toy Con's paying for a full show because this is what they wanted.
Right. Does that say a lot about the recent, you know, struggles Prim has had, you know, with getting people there? And
well, I guess because Buffalo Bills didn't open, I just saw, until January of 2023.
Yeah.
So I don't know about the other two casinos, but now it was really crowded in there. You know, I guess some people ask, like, hey, is this how it normally is? They're like, well, you know, they do a lot of concerts. So they have to do a lot of events. And like I said, they got a database, an email listing.
Right.
And obviously a lot of those people came. Like the mariachis, they didn't know. Their families were going to the event because they knew of it. Because I guess they've done it before.
Wow.
But they couldn't have done it in the last, you know, probably just before the pandemic or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But now they're, you know, they're cycling through the groups. I saw on House Seats, it was like Marshall Tucker Band and somebody. So it didn't matter that they didn't sell a lot of tickets. They're just trying to get people there.
Yeah.
You know, they've already like, hey, we'd love to talk to you about doing, you know, a four-wall event. And it's like, whoa. You know, we're not doing a four-wall event in Prim. It's just too difficult. Right. You know, we need to bring in big name people. It was like, hey, I told them, it was like many years ago. It had to be between 10 and 12 years ago. Bassman was involved with it. There was a guy who worked for Rush, Mike Halverson, and they did a show in Prim that had like DDP on it. China was on it. X-Pac was on it. And all these big name guys were on this show. and it was at Buffalo Bills. It was a paid show. Nobody, Bassman wasn't taking a shot because there was probably 300 people there.
Right.
But that show probably cost Prim, you know, 20,000 minimum, right. Maybe more. Because, you know, Bassman had to tack on his juice. But there was a lot of people that were ex-WWE superstars on this event. You know, DDP and China and X-Pac alone at that point, you know, that might have been 15, 20,000 just for the three of them.
Right. And, you know, and I think I would, not knowing, but pretty safe to say, I know Rick had good relationships with all of them, just kind of like you do too, with the guys that you know. So, you know, I think that, you know, again, that, you know, big price, but it also,
you gotta remember something. It's a paid show. So it wasn't right. Rick's money coming out of his pocket. Right. I've learned on paid shows, you try to get people a little bit more than you're not going to ask for the brother price.
Right.
Like Kevin Nash, this is what he's working for. Whatever the deal was, that's what Kevin Nash was working for.
Right.
But it was the deal I made and Disco hooked it up. So he probably gave me a little better price.
Right.
And it was like, okay, but that price was still high. It was, if I remember, it was $4,000.
Sure.
And then it turned out when we got him the plane ticket, it was, I'm 6'8". I got to fly first class. It was like, well, I need to be made aware of it. Well, at that point, Prim's like, well, you, not Prim, Mesquite was, well, you've already sent in the invoice. We're not paying the extra $700. So that came out of my pocket, the upgrade the ticket.
Right. Oh,
you know, but that's, it's like, well, you kind of got to make that clear, you know, in that situation.
Right.
But like Mesquite paid probably $17,000-$18,000 for that show. And right. The reason they made money on that show was because there was high rollers that they helicoptered in that wanted to come to the show because they were wrestling fans and saw that guys like Kevin Nash and John Morrison were on there. Yeah. And hopefully that would be the same situation in the Lucha thing. Hey, we're bringing in Psycho Clown. We're bringing in a Conan. Hey, you guys want to pay even more? We'll bring in a Blue Demon or whatever. You know, we have access to every luchador. You know, MK will bring Adonis in. You know, whatever it is. Lucha Underground guys like a Cage. Willie Mack, you know, they're local enough, you know.
Right.
So, but it's the same thing to do a Mecca there. You know, we've never had a Mecca that was funded by the casino.
Right.
You know, I could blow that shit up.
Yeah.
You know, if you're paying, yo, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And look at the talent that's available, you know, Nick Namath is doing some shows now.
They're like, oh, we'd love to have Dwayne. I'm like, yeah, you better have a couple million. It'd be worth it though, right? Yeah, sure. I'll be set for life. I'll give Dwayne $1.8 million and I'll get the $200,000 finder's fee and I'm good.
He's the big boss, though. You know,
the big boss.
Big boss. But yeah, I mean, that is an interesting thought because there are, you know, there are some good available names. In fact, one guy who keeps kind of floating around now is one Matt Hardy, who seems to be almost up.
Well, if I'm bringing in a Hardy, I'm bringing in the Hardys.
Right.
I think that's where the value is at this point.
Right.
Because with the meet and greets and the idea of both of them, because, right. Yeah, you know, Matt slowed down a bit. You know, he's getting up there. So is Jeff. But the difference between bringing in Matt Hardy and the Hardys is night and day. Right. You know, the Hardys are iconic. And Matt Hardy, you could see all the time.
Right.
Having them together on an independent show hasn't been done, you know, since when, if you considered it Ring of Honor back in the day.
Right.
When he worked Ring of Honor before the, you know, he was supposed to work our pandemic show.
Right.
Matt. And, you know, before that, he had actually worked, I believe, the Mecca before that, because I'm pretty sure, I think he worked for Ring of Honor and then he worked for us or however how it was, I remember. And because I remember him telling me, yes, that was probably in 2017 or 18. That was his last event. Because literally 2 weeks later, the Hardy Boys won the titles at WrestleMania.
WrestleMania, right.
So it was the Mecca that we had done right before that.
Which would have been 17.
Before the WrestleMania. So whatever year that was when they went back.
Yeah, it would have been 17. Yeah.
Right. Because he had just gotten released in 2020, was signed with AEW. So he had... We were going to be basically, again, his only appearance before he signed, because he was already signed with AEW. And when right. the pandemic hit, he was the show was on that Sunday, and he right. was going to be in Florida for the taping on that Friday or Saturday, or maybe even Wednesday. I don't even know. But I remember we were on the phone 20 times, and as things continued to get worse, the wife, his wife, Rebbe didn't want him to come to Vegas and be stuck
right.
in that situation because he was already, he ended up driving from North Carolina to Florida because there was no flights probably at that point. Because right. by Monday,
everything was shut.
Was shut down.
Yep. Yeah, because at that point too, the ROH crew, those guys were here. And they were trying to get everyone on flights right away.
Right, because half of ROH made it and the other half didn't.
Yep.
Like Jay Lethal was hanging out. He was at our show, you know, whatever. Yep. But, you know, we have a wish list. Like if we did the Mecca, yeah, love to have FTR there.
Sure.
You know, the Hardys. It would be a who's who. You know, within their budget mixed in with, you know, our top crop. Right. But again, you know, there'd be the wish list and then the local wish list. And it's like, hey, who can we use? That's great. But, you know, we don't have to worry about rooms and flights because they're here. And that right. and you're talking like the Willie Max and the Brian Cages and the Jeff Cobbs, who we haven't used in a long time, but they're local.
Right.
And I saw recently Cobb post something about, you know, maybe working a little bit more in America. Well, how about driving 35 minutes and making a pretty good amount of money?
Yeah.
He's fresh to the local market, other than in California, where they've probably seen him a lot more because of New Japan.
Right.
And a couple of random shows for guys that he was buddies with growing up, kind of like the way we do it with Hammerstone and Bay. You know, the Mike Reigns of the world, you know, sure. get Cobb. Who comes in for the, you know, the brother rate.
Sure.
And, you know, helps out people that they're fond of and have worked with in the past who helped them get started, you know, in the loop.
Right.
You know, like us, we got Cage for a good deal and, you know, and the Comic Con and the Toy Con wanted them. So we actually got two matches for that. We got, the Mecca Grand Championship will be on the line. Chris Bay versus Danny Limelight. Whoa, and wow. Brian Cage will wrestle Matt Vandergriff.
Really? Cage and Vandergriff?
Yes.
And that's their first time, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That's... Cage has always said he's open to wrestle because all Cage wants to do on the indies is go out there and have cool matches with cool people. So, you know, I pitched him the match. I said... Because initially I was going to have him work Bay, but it was like, well, hey, Bay and Limelight, you know, that'd be a good matchup.
Yeah.
And because we've already seen Matt and Bay and we've already seen Matt and Limelight. So right. that would just be a repeat.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that Brian gets a lot of he's very underrated in terms of, I don't think a lot of people really understand how much he loves wrestling.
He puts together matches that
smart.
It doesn't matter what size you are. It's like, we're going to have a good match and we're going to have a cool match. He doesn't look at it and be like, well, you know, I'm 100 pounds more than you. We're going to give you very little and I'm going to dominate. No, he's, you know, you go watch his matches and everybody, you know, go watch a Tito, who he knows well. Willie Mack when they were getting AEW dark matches against Brian Cage. And then go watch other people get matches against a name guy. And it'd be like, wow, it sure seems weird. Whenever these guys wrestle Brian Cage, man, it's such a competitive match. Yep. Because Brian is so giving when it comes to that and putting together matches. It's like he put together, you know, Keith Lee and Sammy Callahan because Davey didn't make it. So it was going to be Keith Lee and Cage, became the three-way, and it was the most talked about match maybe that we ever had at that point.
Sure.
You know, and Keith Lee, nobody knew in the world in Vegas who the fuck that dude was. Nobody outside of Texas knew who he was. Yeah. But Brian Cage recommended him to me. I'm like, hey, Brian, I'm doing a Mecca. Hey, it's the day after Ring of Honor. I want to bring in some fresh stuff, some good blood. Keith Lee, you got to bring him in. I'm like, okay, well, I'll put him in with you. And then it was like, oh, then Sammy. And those guys fucking killed it. And people were like, you know, please come back, Chance, you know, 2 minutes into the match. Like, they were watching him like they watched Willie Mack, and it was like, wait a second, this guy's like 100 pounds more than Willie Mack doing all this crazy shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people loved it.
Yeah.
And that's what Brian's good at. Like, you know, putting together the matches, making sure that everybody shines. I remember he got in trouble. You know, he was wrestling Wrestle Circus, and I think it was either Tessa Blanchard or somebody else. And I think he was like the Impact champion at the time. And they gave him so much heat because he had such a competitive match with a woman, which is crazy because like a year and a half later, Tessa was the world champion, not just the women's champion.
Yeah.
But they went nuts because he was, you know, eliminated in a battle royal by a woman.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And I think that that's, you know, sometimes that kind of gets overlooked. I think that, you know, fans' perceptions from what is presented is sometimes.
You can only do what they let you do.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I was talking with Brian, and, you know, we were talking in the past about the frustrations of, yeah, I'm getting paid good, but I want to work, you know, but you see it. Lance Hoyt's the same way. He's a guy that it's like his contract's up, and the question becomes, do you re-sign to make really good money? Or, hey, you know what? I've made good money in this business. I want to have fun.
Right.
You know, I'm pretty sure, you know, Hammerstone kind of had two offers. And the offer in TNA is you're going to be on most of the shows. AEW could tell you a lot, but you can watch as a guy like Rusev went in there, they used him, then they didn't use him. Christian, oh, they didn't use him. Then all of a sudden, now he's back in, he's doing the stuff with Edge. But there's like long periods of time. And when I say long periods, I don't say 5 or 6 shows. I'm talking 5 or 6 months that you're never on TV. You're never on a show. And it's like, yeah, you're still getting paid.
Right.
But you think you have a lot more to offer. And I know that's the frustrations in AEW because the roster is too big. Cycling in, cycling out, the new signees. Oh, okay, looks like Miro's getting the push again. And then all of a sudden you see him for a month or two, and then here he is, gone again for 6 right. months. But he re-signed.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when you hear stories from the various people, you know, it really is kind of a, you understand the predicament of, you know, what it is. And that is,
there's always going to be frustration. There's always going to be jealousy. The latest is Mercedes Moné, Sasha Banks, is getting more than $1 million a year.
Right.
To me, she's overpaid, no doubt about it. But when you hear women on the roster complaining because they're getting 1/10, well, that's what they're worth. They were not worth the 1/10 until AEW gave them the platform. Sasha Banks is a big name. Regardless of what you think her worth is, she is far worth more than 99% of the AEW women's roster. Her being, it's like Ronda Rousey comes in. Despite you got Charlotte Flair and all these people, it's like, oh shit, you got Ronda Rousey. She's known throughout the world because she was an MMA champion. So guess what? She's not going to work for what Nia Jax is going to want to work for, or what Charlotte Flair or Becky Lynch, all and Becky and Bayley and all them, they had to come in at a number. And then they had to prove themselves year after year after year to get what they're getting. And now Charlotte Flair is extremely highly paid. And Becky Lynch is extremely highly paid. Right. But girls that are in the Ring of Honor division and the Billy Starks of the world, she got known from GCW and has some name value. But nobody in the world's paying her $1 million. Sasha Banks is a free agent, and she's playing them against that and this. It's like Okada. We've heard the numbers. It's insanity because outside of the hardcore wrestling fans, most people have no idea who Okada is. So, or Will Ospreay. As great as he may be, Will Ospreay is going to have a slow climb in WWE. And from what you hear, Tony Khan was basically bidding against himself in all three cases of Okada, Ospreay, and Mercedes Moné, because he wanted them. So their value is whatever somebody wants to pay you. It's the same thing in baseball. Like, oh my God, Otani got fucking $750 million for 10 years. Oh, but he's a two-way player. Oh yeah, but he probably can't pitch for 3 years or 2 years or 1 year or whatever because he had surgery. Who's worth $75 million when the other highest paid, like a Mike Trout, is worth $40 million. You're telling me this guy's worth twice as much? No, but the Dodgers got more money than anybody, so they don't give a fuck. If I pay you $50 million or $75 million, all that matters is this year I'm going to make $500 million instead of $530 million.
Right. Yeah.
So Tony Khan has all the toys to play with. So hey, guess what? Mercedes Moné's got to get her time on the microphone. Okada's got to have his time. The Young Bucks are back. They got to have their time. Ospreay's got to have his time. You know, what about everybody else who's a mainstay, the Eddie Kingstons of the world? And when, you know, Danielson's on all the time and Jericho. Now, what happens to Wardlow, who they built up and everybody gave a shit about? And then it was like, oh, he's gone again. What happened to him? Oh, now he's back again. Now this time he's ready. Well, what happened to the other three times?
Well, now this time he's ready, and then we have Samoa Joe choke him out, and legitimately, it's like,
And you got Samoa Joe as the champ, and now MJF's going to be back soon enough. Like, where are these slots? Where are these high-profile slots? Is Sky Blue going to get a slot over Mercedes Moné? Of course not. She doesn't deserve it. But if she goes in there and she kills it with her and makes herself valuable, just like Britt Baker did and just like a lot of others did, or Jade Cargill, who people say, oh, she can't fucking wrestle. She showed up at the Royal Rumble and everybody was like, oh, shit, she's a bad motherfucker, because they position you the way they want to. They made her look like a monster. She could have won the Rumble and nobody would have been like, oh, that's bullshit.
Right.
The only people that are bitching about Jade Cargill are the AEW fans who are now like, oh, yeah, they pushed her and she wasn't deserving of it. And she goes over there. And it's like, because regardless of what anybody wants to believe, WWE is always number one.
Well, and the other factor too, and I think this is, you know, this is night and day, because someone like Jade Cargill, yeah, she's going to wrestle, but the true value in her brand is in entertainment. She's going to end up in television or movies or something like that because she's got that. She has that there, and WWE can make that happen for her.
And right now, because she, in a ring, would probably look so inferior to a Becky Lynch and a Bayley, even a Bayley and an Asuka and all these women wrestlers that the WWE have. People talk, I don't know how anybody can compare the divisions. AEW, right. Women's division is here. Right. WWE, the best women wrestler are there. Does the AEW have some that are fantastic? Sure. Absolutely. But how many times did you see clips that were embarrassing, right, that made it to TV that people were cringing over? You know, other than Nia Jax, who actually, you know, supposedly put out a spectacular match her last time out. But other than that, she was always looked down upon as, man, she's fucking shitty.
Yep.
And Jade Cargill, that's why they didn't make her win the Rumble. Like, I would have her win the Rumble and have her win. But they're not going to have her squash Asuka. They're not going to have her squash the other one who's the champ, Io Sky. And they're not going to have her squash Charlotte and Becky and Bayley. And no. So what do you do? There isn't a SmackDown or, you know, a main event champion where she can go up and beat the younger ones or go to NXT, you know, maybe go to NXT and beat the shit out of people. But because of her exposure on the Rumble, people want to see her on the main roster.
Right.
So her maybe not looking so great in an NXT match because now she's wrestling younger wrestlers who are far less experienced, right, than the ones who can give her a good match.
Right.
I'm pretty sure she can have a match with Becky Lynch or anybody there and go 10, 12 minutes, and people will be like, oh, yeah, that was really good.
Yep.
Because believe me, I watch enough that I see in the women's matches Rhea Ripley, and it's like, yeah, kind of clunky at times.
Sure.
A lot of stuff's clunky. I thought the Elimination Chamber match that I watched was very clunky. So Jade Cargill could have went in there and killed people, but now you're killing your entire roster of top people. Yep. So it's like, if we're going to at least have the person from that company come over here and kill our guys or girls, you know, they got to be ready for it. Cody, yep, Rhodes was already a known star. He was a WWE guy. So despite the fact that he left and became a bigger name, is a different story than the homegrown AEW talent in Jade Cargill.
Right.
Or CM Punk. The only reason AEW got him was because he was a star from the WWE days.
Right.
But if you look, he went to AEW, people went nuts. He came back to WWE, people went nuts.
Right.
The majority of the fan base isn't looking at the internet to know that he fucking punched Jungle Boy in the face.
Right.
I guarantee you at least 60, and I would say probably higher, 70%, have no clue who fucking Jungle Boy is, or 90% of the AEW roster, because they are WWE fans. Right. I don't call them wrestling fans. They're WWE fans.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that if I don't have Matt Hardy on my flyer, and I have a guy named Killer Cross and Hammerstone, they could give two shits.
Right.
But if I have Matt Hardy on the flyer, oh, shit, Matt Hardy's on the flyer. Now they'll pay attention because that's the guy they know. They could care less. Oh, Killer Cross, he must be some kid from a backyard that they do wrestling shows on. Like, they don't right. And again, it's gotten better over the ages with NXT where they've learned younger talent, Ring of Honor, things like that. But 10, 12 years ago, that's not how it was.
Right. And – you know, it's interesting. I saw a random post that I thought was very telling, and it was someone who said that Bryan Danielson was misused horribly in the WWE. And everything about that sentence made it perfectly clear that you don't understand what the WWE is, because who the fuck is Bryan Danielson if he did not appear on WWE and was, you know, a phenomenon that was built through that company and that fan base?
1,000% because he was never a guy known for anything other than being maybe the best wrestler in the world.
Yep.
But he was a guy who was considered no promo skills.
Yep.
No character. He was great. So on the indies and Ring of Honor, the way they built that up, fantastic. Him and Punk, fantastic. It took Bryan Danielson a while. Because first he got fired from the thing and he came back. And it wasn't like, oh my God, Bryan Danielson's in NXT. And all of a sudden NXT people were flooded for it. Nobody gave a shit.
Yep.
Bryan Danielson got over when it became, yes, yes. Yep. And it was the catchphrase. And then people paid attention. Same thing with the Kofi mania. They wanted to get behind somebody. Danielson was the guy. And WWE gave him the push. Because Danielson was also the guy who had a, 12-second match with Sheamus at WrestleMania?
Well, yeah, right. And I think, you know, the other thing, too, and I think this also gets lost, when people talk about, you know, AEW, they put together banger matches and it's so good, blah, blah, blah. Well, the reason that Danielson got so over is because they did the vignettes with Kane and him as going through the couples therapy and trying to become
Scorpio friends. Sky was the psychiatrist.
So, you know, it's funny to me that it's like
it's character driven. The reason why anybody cares about Edge and Christian is because of the 20 years of their friendship.
Right. Right.
And Christian continually played, whether he went to TNA, AEW, he was that pricky cocksucker. Pretty much the only way to explain Christian. Now, Edge comes over as the living legend that they were best friends. They grew up together. They were tag team champions together. They were by each other's side. They were at the wedding parties, things like that. But Christian does such a great job, which then also helps elevate Killswitch, Luchasaurus, and Nick Wayne. And now he's taking these guys under his wing and making them valuable cogs in the engine.
Right. Yep.
And the only reason that exists is because of the goodwill and the history of everything this guy did in WWE.
Yeah.
Same thing with Jericho. Same thing with Claudio. Now, yeah, you may feel he was misused, but he had championships. He was a U.S. champion, intercontinental champion, tag champion numerous times. He was featured a lot. He's swinging fucking Big Show 40 times. They're giving him a platform to be like, oh, shit, can you believe what this motherfucker did? Now, just because he didn't get the heavyweight championship, guess what? Neither did Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase, and neither did Jake the Snake Roberts. And those guys are far and away.
Yeah.
The problem with AEW is there's 35 fucking belts. I don't even know who the champions are in half these belts.
Right. And
Eddie Kingston's got 9 different belts and he only defends one at a time.
Well, and that makes a very good point. And this is, I think, one of the funniest points to me about AEW. And that is, off the top of my head, Kenny Omega and MJF. If I'm not mistaken, again, off the top of my head. Oh, Hangman Page, I guess, had it too. Those are the only three guys who are not WWE created stars who've held the championship. And it just, I find it so funny that there's this, you know, such
right. a Right, Moxley. And again, there's differences of saying, hey, he was in WWE. Like, if Sean Spears ever won anything, I wouldn't be like, oh, he's a WWE guy, because he didn't do shit there. Well, right. He went to AEW because of Cody, and he didn't do shit there either. So, but Moxley was a superstar. Yep. Jericho was a superstar. Danielson never won the title, right?
No, Danielson.
I don't think he did.
No, I guess he didn't.
Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe never really had that big run in WWE.
But he's still.
He was a Ring of Honor guy. He was not really a WWE guy, because he did stuff in NXT and he beat Cross for that title. But he wasn't really, like, he never really did much on. He was a TNA guy after
the,
that.
Right. But the point being that if he never was on WWE television, he wouldn't be known outside of that AEW circle.
Yeah, but I still think he's minor because he spent so much time being successful in TNA and Ring of Honor that it's a toe in the water for him in WWE because he got hurt. He got put in a position of power, but not wrestling. So he may have been around. It's like Nick Aldis. You know, if Nick Aldis went to AEW, became the champion, yeah, he was the GM. He never really got to do. Most WWE fans have no idea that Nick Aldis was Magnus in TNA because they don't even know who Magnus is, you know, type of thing. Or being an NWA champion at that point really didn't mean anything in the big picture. But in most cases, the main guys, you know, you could say whatever about FTR not being pushed, but they were WWE guys.
Right.
You know? And, Omega, Page, I guess, for sure. MJF, 1,000%.
Yep.
But in that time frame, they've only been around, 4 years? So it isn't like they've been around 20. And, Moxley held the belt for CM Punk held the belt. Moxley held the belt. Jericho held the belt. Page held it for a little while.
Right. I think Omega probably had it the longest, I would assume, with that.
But, it's kind of like saying, in the WWE, if it wasn't for Vern Gagne in the AWA, Hulk Hogan and Macho Man was in this WWE would never have any homegrown talent. Everybody was taken from a territory.
Right.
And it's pretty much the same now. It's like, you're in your NXT. Now what are they? The tag champs in TNA. Grizzled Young Vets or whatever they are. Right. But they beat Bay in Austin. And, Khan from The Ascension is becoming a big deal in TNA. And it's like, you got to find yourself. There's not always spots anywhere. And, AEW is notorious, just like TNA was the worst at it, at getting an ex-WWE guy. He'd have to come in as a babyface because you couldn't bring him in as a heel because they cheered him because they were known from WWE.
Right.
Then they'd have to have a program where they would turn heel because that's what they were better at and that's what they were kind of needed for.
Right.
Whether it was Kurt Angle. Who's going to boo Kurt Angle when he comes out? Now, Kurt Angle's a phenomenal babyface, but he's also a phenomenal heel. And Booker T and Nash, and they did the Millionaires thing, even with Sting, and he was a heel. And it's you're always going to try to take what you can from somewhere.
Right.
Because, again, AEW isn't WWE where they had their training school and they're bringing people. No, their way of it was, hey, who are the cool indie guys? It's like something came up where somebody posted they liked. It was a picture of Jungle Boy in 2018 wrestling, making his FSW debut. Well, that was 2018. He was young as fuck.
Yeah.
AEW was 2 years later only. It could have been a year and a half from that point. And I was always like, what the fuck? So when they signed those early guys like Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus and Orange Cassidy, all these guys had exclusive contracts. Yet they were only running like once a week and Jungle Boy wasn't on the show in the beginning. It's like, how is this guy getting better? They don't have a training school and they're not letting him wrestle Chris Bay at my show anymore.
Right.
Like this guy needs reps. He's like 19 years old, 18 years old, 20 years old. Give these guys reps. Let them go out there on the indies and get better so they're ready for TV instead of having green guys that are nowhere ready for TV and then they're looked down upon. Because it's like, what are you looking at WWE? Randy Orton, fucking Roman Reigns, the Usos, guys who've been doing it for 10, Bryan Danielson, 20 years.
Yeah.
And then you got this 19-year-old kid who's supposed to make an impression who probably has had less than 100 matches in his life.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to let these guys get any work in. Because from when they signed, remember, when AEW said, hey, we signed Jungle Boy, and we signed Jericho, and we signed this, they probably ran the one show at the pay-per-view, And then they didn't get the TV deal for 6 months, 9 months later. So right. for a year, I'm just sitting around getting paid, which again is great. But I'm trying to become a great professional wrestler. So unless I'm going to a buddy's school that has a ring, I'm really not getting in any ring time.
Right.
Which kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah.
Because now you have a year to make these guys get better, but they don't have the opportunity to because you're not letting them get matches.
Right. Yeah. It, you know, it's interesting to say the least. All right, Joe, final thoughts before we take off for this week.
Well, you know, No Escape's looking great, man. And, you know, front row sold out. And we got 9 matches. You know, I don't want to do 9 matches on a card normally, and I haven't been for a long time, but this is 9 matches, and it includes 4 steel cage matches, so it's going to be a little long on the show. Sure. But we're doing a opening match, you know, 6-pack, suicidal scramble, whatever you want to call it. Right now we have Brett the Threat, Matt Vandegrift, and Remy Marcel returning. He's been hurt for a long time, so this is his first match back in a while. So we got 3 spots. We're waiting on Santana Jackson as the 4th spot. I know he's somewhere Saturday, so he's flying in Sunday, but he's got to figure out when he's getting in. And then we got 2 other spots. I've reached out to some former FSW champions that are, you know, they're currently wrestling for us. They're just not, you know, they're not scheduled to be on the show. So hopefully I'll have some answers. At this point from the filming, we got 10 days. So with a week within the next 2 or 3 days, that card will be finalized. And then we're also doing a pre-show match. That will be a 4-way tag, featuring, Mariachi Montaña, Makeshift Chemistry of, Fox and AJ, and also the MK Army of Koa and, Duke Lawrence. And we're finalizing who the 4th team is going to be. So this card is fucking loaded. And it's our first casino show since November, since the Silver Nugget, which has been closed since September. So it made it really difficult. But it seems like the buzz is aplenty. People are excited. And yep. Like I said, like I'm still in awe at the numbers. Yeah. That we're at 10 days beforehand, because I'm used to, you know, the last 2 or 3 days getting that bump to the big numbers. And if everything seems copacetic, as he says, these numbers are going to be, because if we could still do that well the last few days, you know, this is going to rival the last show we ever did in, I believe, 2017, when we had Alberto Del Rio versus Moose. And that was No Escape.
Yeah.
Back then. So, and I think it was Cross and it might have been Matt Hardy in the last ever, must be the Steel Cage Ladder match. So maybe it's the fact that it's a Steel Cage Ladder match. That's the draw. I don't know.
Well, there you go, everyone. Next week we'll kind of talk about the card and get everyone ready for the show. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and we'll talk to you guys.